This weekend marks the 95th anniversary of one of the darkest days in GAA and Irish history, as 14 people lost their lives inside Croke Park. The tragedy became known as Bloody Sunday. Yesterday, the GAA paid tribute to those that lost their lives before the international rules test between Ireland and Australia. And the family of one of the victims, Jane Boyle, unveiled a headstone at her grave at Glasnevin Cemetery. Darren Frehill has been looking back on the tragic events which marred the challenge match between Dublin and Tipperary on that fateful day, 21st of November 1920.
It's Saturday, the 21st of November 2015. It's exactly 95 years to the day since 14 people were killed at a Gaelic football match between Dublin and Tipperary at Croke Park. The massacre became known as Bloody Sunday, and it changed Irish history forever. I'm here at Glasnevin Cemetery on the north side of Dublin City. It's just 2 kilometres from Croke Park, the scene of those tragic events all those years ago. 7 of the victims from that day lie in unmarked graves, but this morning, Jane Boyle is finally getting her headstone. It's been a long wait for her family.
Jane, we the Boyle family, together with friends in the GAA, are gathered here to afford you a very basic honour. We're very sorry that it took 95 years to formally commemorate your memory. People have asked why you've had no headstone. Some people say it was because the family thought headstones were pretentious. Other people said it was because of the time that was in it. Dublin was under military rule at the time. There were people being killed by the day. When you were talking to somebody, you didn't know who they were they a spy, what side they were on. And Dublin people, and indeed the rest of the country, were paranoid. My grandfather, who was Thomas Boyle, was effectively head of the Boyle family. He was the eldest. I feel that he took the decision not to put up a gravestone because it would draw too much attention to the family and perhaps put them into a danger that they didn't deserve. And that's why I think Jane didn't get a headstone.
My name is Richard Staveley, and I'm a great-grandnephew of Jane Boyle. She was my grandaunt.
Richard, what was Jane Boyle doing in Croke Park on this day 95 years ago, and how did she die?
Yes, she was due to be married the following week. She had selected her wedding dress and her trousseau. She was all excited, as any young lady would be. Her fiancé said to her, "Let's take a break. This is Sunday. Let's go to Croke Park and relax." So she went along with her fiancé, Daniel Byrne, and she was actually linking his arms at the halfway line when the ground was invaded by the military and they started random shooting at the crowd, and she, along with 12 others, were shot and killed, and 2 others died subsequently. An hour and a half after the event, she was taken by ambulance to the Mater Hospital. The inquiry afterwards was held in camera, and nobody knew the results of that, because the British establishment kept it under wraps until 1999. But then we found out, and it was confirmed, that she had died of gunshot wounds. But the family knew that already, because when they got her clothes back, there was a bullet hole in her coat.
Jane, the church you booked for your wedding was the same church that did your funeral. The Boyle family were looking forward to a great shindig on your wedding day, and they ended up attending your funeral. But that wasn't your fault. Indeed, Jane, many of your relations are here today. As a credit to you, you've brought the Boyle family together again.
Jane was one of 15,000 at Croke Park to watch a challenge game between Dublin and Tipperary. Earlier that morning, 14 British agents had been shot by the IRA.
Michael Foley, author of The Bloodied Field, Bloody Sunday in Croke Park.
Michael, just paint a picture of that time for us, 1921. What was Ireland like?
Well, it was a place of extreme tension, obviously, and on the morning of the killings in Croke Park, 14 British agents had been shot by Michael Collins' squad. So everybody around Dublin was wondering what was going to happen next, because the normal cycle was atrocity followed by reprisal. So people wondered where were the security forces going to strike. Now, what happened in Croke Park actually started out as a search operation. It was obviously a botched search operation. When the security forces got there, the people who were in charge of the security forces were too far back in the convoy to actually control the police when they got there. So the police essentially just charged down towards the corner of the Canal End and the Hogan Stand, started shooting into the ground from that side, forcing the crowd just to basically run towards the hill and up to exits on those sides. So it was obviously, it was 90 seconds of absolute and sheer and utter terror for everybody, and it resulted in 14 deaths.
The game itself, why did it go ahead when there was so much trouble that morning? Was it a conscious decision the GAA made to let the game go ahead?
The GAA had been warned that morning that something might happen at Croke Park. The IRA had got information through a source that the security forces were planning to come to Croke Park to do what at Croke Park, they didn't know. So the GAA had a choice to make, but they ultimately decided that on the basis that they didn't know what was going to happen, that, you know, they didn't want to have one of their games seen as connected to what had happened in the morning. They didn't want the GAA connected to political killings. They wanted to stay as apolitical as it possibly could. So for that reason, and also for the reason that there was such a big crowd in at that stage, they didn't want to evacuate the ground. They thought that might cause more of a panic than even the security forces coming to perform a search operation. So that's why it went ahead in the end. They did close the turnstiles briefly, but there was so much trouble outside the ground with people who couldn't get in that the turnstile operators relented and opened the turnstiles again, and a very large crowd went in, probably around the 15,000 mark, which would have been a very, very big crowd for a game in Croke Park at that time.
Tonight we remember the extraordinary story that unfolded here in Croke Park 95 years ago on November the 21st, 1920. Dublin played Tipperary in a football challenge match. British forces entered the ground and shot 14 civilians, including Tipperary player Michael Hogan, after whom the Hogan Stand is named. We recall an event that changed history, had repercussions from Dublin to the halls of Westminster, and changed the lives of the families and friends of those who were killed.
The game was 10 minutes old. The security forces, the convoy of trucks had crested the canal bridge, if people are aware of Croke Park, if you're walking down towards the Hogan Stand in the Croke Park Hotel, it's the little canal bridge there. Trucks were started at that point and way back up the road. A combined force of RIC, Black and Tans and auxiliaries were there. They jumped out of the trucks. Some of them lined up on the canal bridge and started shooting into the ground immediately. Others just ran straight down towards the turnstiles that were on the corner, went over the wall and into the ground and started shooting randomly at the crowd as they ran away. It lasted for 90 seconds. The first victim, we think, was an 11-year-old child who was sitting in a tree at the corner of the Canal Inn in the Hogan Stand. He turned around to see what the noise was behind him, and a bullet went straight through him and knocked him out of the tree. But it was an appalling tragedy, and one that had massive, massive ramifications for the GAA and the country as a whole for years afterwards.
Michael Hogan was aged 24 from Grange Buckler in Tipperary. He was a farmer. Jane Boyle, aged 26, from Lennox Street in Dublin, a charge hand to a pork butcher.
Of the 14 people who were killed, three of them were children. One was 10 years of age, Jerome O'Leary. He was from Blessington Street in Dublin. John William Scott lived on Fitzroy Avenue in Drumcondra, and from John William Scott's door, he could look out and he could see Croke Park every morning. He went to the game. He was shot in the chest. William Robinson was 11 years old. He was sitting in the crook of a tree, and he was shot out of the tree. Jane Boyle, who were here to unveil her grave, she was shot in the back and crushed in the surge of people. As I say, it was 14 people altogether. In terms of where they were from, there was a man from Wexford. There was obviously people there from Tipperary, there was people from Dublin, Limerick. It was a nationwide tragedy, and an awful lot of the people who were there came from very poor backgrounds, and a lot of people who were killed came from very poor backgrounds. Two come to mind immediately: Patrick O'Dowd from Fairview, who's buried here in Glasnevin. He doesn't have a gravestone either. He was actually helping people over a wall to safety when he was shot, and he actually fell over the wall and landed on the last person he had helped over. Another person, Michael Feary, who lived kind of just up on Gardiner Place, which again would have been very close to Croke Park. He's buried in a common grave that's not marked somewhere in Glasnevin. So again, people from a variety of different backgrounds, some of them coming from real poverty and so on, some of them coming from middle class backgrounds, some of them are up from the country working up in Dublin, and they just went to see a game of football, and obviously they were just in the wrong place at a tragically wrong time.
Very few of the survivors went on record to speak about the events of that day. One of those that did was the Tipperary right half-back Bill Ryan. He spoke to Donica O'Dooling on RTÉ Radio in May 1978.
Bill Ryan, I think you're the first survivor of Bloody Sunday I ever met. Do you remember the game very well?
I really do. Of course, remember.
Where were you playing in the team?
At right half-back.
Did you go to Dublin that morning, or when did you go?
I went the night before.
Now, can you remind us what happened when Bloody Sunday began?
Well, the first thing happened, an aeroplane came over the playing pitch, circled around over the pitch, and went away. The next thing happened, I think it was the auxiliaries that came in the canal gate, and they fired three shots in succession. We were playing into the railway goal. I was out the field maybe about 50 yards at the time. I looked back and I saw all the crowd rushing around at the canal end. And the next thing I saw, Mick Hogan and a Dublin player coming running in my direction. So I turned and ran down the field the same way. A Dublin player was running in front of me and I followed him. And he crossed the wires now about the end of the Cusick stand. He crossed over the playing pitch and I followed him out of the playing pitch. And I thought that up to that time that it was blanks they were firing. But I could hear the bullets whizzing. I thought they were hitting off of the wires. But when I got out of the playing pitch, I had the Dublin player lost. He was gone away. I don't know which direction he went. But I crossed out over where you call Hill 16 now. And at that time, it was corrugated iron, the galvanised, as we call it, was the outer wall. When I got that far, it was flattened out. The crowd had knocked it to the ground. So just when I crossed over this fence, I was held up with the soldier, the military, brought back in again, partly behind the railway goal. I was there for what I thought was 2 hours, but I suppose it wasn't, with your hands over your head.
Did they rough you up?
Well, no. No, they were, the military were, no, we couldn't say anything to them. They were very fair, no, the military.
These weren't black and tans, no?
Oh, no, they were the soldier. Military. We were held for a long time there. You were searched and plain clothes men were up and down, you know, and they were interviewing. They were there at everybody, but they'd go to certain lads that they thought they knew and question them and all that. But they never one of them came near me. Eventually, this army officer came along and he came up along. He was viewing the crowd too, and when he came up just to where I was, he came across to me and I thought I was spotted. But he said to me, "How long were you playing?" I told him about 10 or 12 minutes. And he said, "Who was winning?" I told him there was no score. And he said, "Did you expect to win?" And I said, "We did."
This was in the middle of all the fuss now, yeah?
Yes. But of course, there was a lot of lads let go at this time. Mm. I was searched, but I was still held there. But eventually, anyway, he said there was a spectator beside me and he made him take off the overcoat and give it to me. So he told me to go then. I left and I went back over to our Hill 16 and God, I was held up with the military again and brought back in. They said to me, "We'll have to have another word with you." Just as we arrived back, this officer was still there and he said, "Let that chap go, he's all right." So I went quick the next time.
Last night, the GAA paid their own tribute to the 14 people that lost their lives before the International Rules game between Ireland and Australia. The stadium lights were dimmed and 14 lights were lit to remember the dead on Hill 16.
From the Artane Band will now accompany Ultron Conor Lucas Goyle on O'Farrell and the Arch Steward Horn Corrigan Duffy as the President lays a reed at the position where Michael Hogan was shot.
Our father's chained in prison's dark, were still in heart and conscience free. How sweet.
Aegon, it's hard to believe 95 years since Bloody Sunday to the exact day, remembering Jane Boyle and the others that lost their lives on that very tragic and sad day in Croke Park. How important is it that we remember the dead on days like today and this particular incident?
This is a seminal and one of the key incidents on this day 95 years ago. Michael Collins and his men all but eliminated British intelligence in Ireland on this day, and that was a huge turning point on the whole Anglo-Irish War. And then as a follow-on from that, 500 British troops left Beggar's Bush Barracks. It's very clear that they were told to search the ground at Croke Park and to see were there any of the people who had been involved in the Bloody Sunday executions, but they disregarded those orders and some of them began firing indiscriminately on the crowd. It was a tragic event, tragic for the people who lost their lives, tragic also to remember that some 200 people were wounded in that horrible event.
Was Bloody Sunday the darkest day in GAA history, do you think, Aegon?
It was a dark day for Ireland, there's no question or doubt about that, but as I said to you, you have to put it into context. Darkest days are whenever you yourself suffer tragedy, so there have been many dark days for GAA family members and for GAA people, but it was certainly the most publicly horrible event that could have happened.
We are remembering Jane Boyle, but there are six other unmarked graves around the country. You've been very generous in your support for getting this tombstone erected for Jane. Would you look at maybe trying to support families in trying to get headstones erected for the others?
We will absolutely do that. There's no question about that. Everybody should be remembered. Two of those who were killed were young children, only 11, 12 years of age. One of them, William Robinson, had climbed a tree. There was a tree at the corner of what's now the Davin and the Hogan Stands, and he was shot out of the tree, and I believe he may be in an unmarked grave. So certainly all of the people who died on Bloody Sunday, they were patrons of the association. They came along to what was our event, and whilst the GAA certainly had nothing to do with what happened, they were our patrons, and we would see it as our duty to commemorate them, and that's what we're doing with Jane Boyle, and certainly we'll do that for all of the families involved.
The 14 that went to Croke Park that day and never returned home included 3 children, a woman and 10 men. They died at a place built to celebrate life, but their deaths will always be remembered on one of the darkest days in GAA and Irish history.
It was a pivotal moment in Irish history. Lloyd George had said, when the Black and Tans were sent into Ireland, "Ha, we have terror by the truth." But he realised, after the events of Bloody Sunday, the assassinations of British intelligence officers and the out-of-control army behaviour in Croke Park, he knew the law and order was out of control and that he'd have to negotiate. And that foreshortened the time to negotiations, and it brought about the treaty. In a way, Jane, in her own way, has made a contribution.
Your murder, many people have said, was an event that caused a major political jolt. It led sensible people to recognise that the enforcement of British rule in Ireland was out of control and it had to be reviewed. It definitely foreshortened the time to the treaty negotiations. Jane, your memory is with us now and will be passed on to future generations.
And that was Darren Frehill remembering Bloody Sunday and yesterday evening's commemorative events in Croke Park and at Glasnevin Cemetery.